This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Glynis Board. This morning, we'll hear about how schools are using federal dollars to cope with COVID-19.
We're still getting calls every day from concerned parents and concerned teachers, concerned service personnel, that they don't feel quite equipped.
That's coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. Construction of an apartment-style housing complex for teachers has been completed in southern West Virginia. Caitlin Tan has more.
Construction on the $8 million Renaissance Village housing project started a year ago in the McDowell County community of Welch. The public-private group Reconnecting McDowell and the City of Welch say the apartments are now ready for renters. The housing project is the centerpiece of a decade-long effort to revitalize the county's schools and economy and is an effort to attract and retain teachers. The partnership also has worked to improve student performance in the county, one being a mentoring program. The building has 16 apartments on two floors alongside two additional floors of retail and commercial space. Original plans called for up to five floors of apartments, but turned out to be too expensive. It's the first new multi-story construction in the community of 1,800 residents in more than 50 years. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Caitlin Tan.
A group of Black Lives Matters activists led by West Virginia House Delegate Danielle Walker marched through Kingwood in Preston County this weekend. As Brittany Patterson reports, it remained mostly peaceful, but tensions ran high throughout the course of the event.
About 30 Black Lives Matter protesters were met by about 50 armed counter-protesters, according to media outlets present at the event. People on both sides of the protest were armed. Despite a few brief physical altercations, the two-hour-long protest remained peaceful, though some counter-protesters spent much of the day shouting insults and racial slurs at the marchers, as well as drowning out BLM chants by revving motorcycle and truck engines.
Terrorist organizations!
Delegate Danielle Walker of Monongalia County spoke after the march to a group of gathered protesters in a nearby school parking lot.
Was it hard? Hell yeah. Was it emotional? Hell yeah. Did it hurt? Every day of my 44 years.
Many protesters and counter-protesters came in from neighboring counties and states. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brittany Patterson.
Sound from the Kingwood rally was collected by Jesse Wright of 100 Days in Appalachia. When Congress passed the CARES Act earlier this summer to help Americans navigate the toll from the coronavirus pandemic, West Virginia received more than $1 billion. Of that figure, more than $86 million was put into a fund called the Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief Fund. That fund was spent two ways. $78 million was dispersed to all 55 counties' school districts to use at their discretion, divvied up based on the number of low-income students in each district. And $8.6 million was withheld by the West Virginia Department of Education to be used for emergencies related to COVID-19. As Liz McCormick reports, last week the West Virginia Board of Education held its first meeting since the schools in the state reopened for the 2020-2021 school year. Board members were given a breakdown of how these dollars were used.
In the weeks leading up to schools reopening, the West Virginia chapter of the American Federation of Teachers and other groups have criticized state officials' handling of school reopening and voiced concerns that schools across the state have not received enough personal protective equipment and other resources to combat the coronavirus. Last week, Fred Albert, president of AFT West Virginia, again addressed these concerns at the State Board of Education meeting.
We're still getting calls every day from concerned parents and concerned teachers, concerned service personnel, that they don't feel quite equipped.
Albert brought up technology and connectivity issues that parents and students were experiencing in the first week of school. He mentioned concerns about teacher vacancies and about the safety of some of the cleaning products being used at schools. Melanie Perkey, executive director of the Office of Federal Programs under the West Virginia Department of Education, addressed some of his concerns, sharing with board members a breakdown about some additional reentry dollars for West Virginia school districts. The Department of Education took that withheld held $8.6 million from the ESSER fund and combined it with state funds from school-related activities that were canceled due to the coronavirus, totaling an additional $12.5 million they called the competitive grant that was awarded to 48 county school districts across the state.
We conducted a competitive grant process where counties could apply for special projects that they wanted to do related to their COVID-19 response. And they had to apply in three areas of priority.
Those areas of priority that counties could apply for included social and emotional needs, technology, or achievement gaps. Perkey says most school districts applied for technology needs, like virtual and remote learning. Perkey says this follows the same trend she and her staff saw with how districts used the original funding awarded from the ESSER fund.
More than half of the funding was spent on technology for remote learning. So they purchased devices, they purchased software for learning management systems and that type of thing. They could be used for sanitation, cleaning, training of staff for doing all of that. They could be used for food preparation.
The seven counties that did not receive any of the competitive grant either did not apply for it or applied but still had funding available from a previous fiscal year. The three counties that applied but didn't get the additional funding were Gilmer, Lincoln, and Roane counties.
We had three counties that applied but did not receive funding, and the reason for that is with the extension that the CARES Act allowed on 19 money, it doesn't expire in September. They have another year.
Perkey explained that those three counties still had unused funds available from fiscal years 2019 and 2020 because of the federal extension. So her staff didn't think those counties needed the extra money from the competitive grant. She says school districts will have until 2022 to use all funds. In total, school districts in West Virginia are receiving more than $90 million in COVID-19 relief from both the ESSER fund and from the competitive grant combined. The department's website features a graph that breaks down what percentage of the ESSER funds were used for things like technology or sanitation products, as well as the amount of funding each county received. The department's website also features a document breaking down how much and which counties received funding from the competitive grant. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick.
In the early 1950s, U.S. Senator Joe McCarthy became one of the most infamous public figures in American history, and he had a unique connection to West Virginia. After World War II, as the Soviet Union and Communist China expanded, McCarthy led what's known as the Red Scare, using unsubstantiated claims and slander to accuse U.S. government officials and private citizens of being traitors and spies. Many lives and careers were destroyed. And the senator's red-baiting career kicked off with a speech at a Lincoln Day dinner in Wheeling, West Virginia. Author Larry Tye's new biography, Demagogue, The Life and Long Shadow of Senator Joe McCarthy, details his dinner and McCarthy's rise and fall. Tye spoke with reporter Eric Douglas.
In a nutshell, describe what McCarthy did, what with his House Un-American Activities Committee and all that, what he did.
He was looking for the perfect issue. And what he did was picked up on the kinds of things that people had been talking about for a dozen years in the old House Un-American Activities Committee. And he took those issues, but he came to Wheeling, West Virginia, and did something with them at that moment that made him the one whose name we remember 70 years later.
Describe for us what he broke out when he broke out the one speech, the second speech, shall we say.
The first speech in his briefcase was a snoozer on national housing policy, which happened to be something he knew a bit about. And had he picked that speech out that night, you and I wouldn't be here talking about him 70 years later. But instead, he reached deeper into his briefcase. He pulled out a speech that he probably had never seen until he pulled it out of the briefcase that night. And McCarthy holds out the speech in his right hand up in the air. And he says, "I have here in my hand a list of 205 spies at the U.S. State Department. They're people that President Truman should have known about. They're people he should have rooted out. And they are making us less safe."
We're seeing it in the United States, but we're seeing it around the world, too. People who are gaslighting, who are just blatantly lying and have no concern for the truth. And, you know, actually something that really struck me is McCarthy coming up with petty nicknames for people.
Yes. So McCarthy came up with incredibly mean, but also incredibly enticing nicknames that the press couldn't resist. He called one of his most famous critics, a senator from Maine named Margaret Chase Smith, who, along with six of her colleagues, shortly after McCarthy's Wheeling speech, came out with what they call their Declaration of Conscience, basically calling him unconscionable and un-American. And Joe McCarthy listened to that, and it seemed like minutes afterwards, he dubbed Smith and her six colleagues Snow White and the Six Dwarfs. It was McCarthy's way of understanding that the public responded to partly something that seemed cute, but that also was a quick catchphrase and something that was a characterization and something that was mean. And McCarthy was, after all, the archetype of American bullies.
What would 1950 McCarthyism have been like if Joe McCarthy had access to Twitter?
So Joe McCarthy was brilliant at exploiting what the medium of the day was. The medium of the day, the leading one, was still newspapers, but it was also television. It was radio. And he knew the deadlines and the techniques for all of those reporters, what they wanted and how to feed them. So he would instinctively, without having to be told, know how to make social media work for him, know how to make instant and 24-hour TV and cable news work for him.
I thought that was interesting. You, in the book, you described several times how he truly manipulated the press by understanding their deadlines and understanding the way they worked, that he could throw something out there and reporters at the time felt it was perfectly reasonable to report whatever somebody said, and then we'll fact check it later. We'll worry about an actual response later.
So he was brilliant. He was cynical. And he understood that what a reporter wanted more than anything else was, if they were a radio reporter, to lead that evening's news cycle. And if they were a print reporter, was to get on page one and stay on page one. And there was no US senator then or maybe ever who put reporters on page one more often than the guy who became known as Low Blow Joe McCarthy.
Tell me, in as easily as you can, what brought McCarthy down finally?
He took on the Army. He made charges he couldn't substantiate. The Army was brought in along with McCarthy for the most famous congressional hearings ever, the Army-McCarthy hearings. And in those hearings, McCarthy did himself in. He showed, when Americans were watching him night after night on television, that he wasn't the great champion that they thought he was at the beginning of the hearings, when his popularity rating nationally was 50%. He looked more like the town bully. And by the end of those hearings, that his popularity had gone from 50% to 34%. So in just 6 months, he went from being the second most popular politician in America to being this vulnerable guy who went down.
That was Larry Tye speaking with Eric Douglas about his new book, Demagogue, The Life and a Long Shadow of Senator Joe McCarthy. This is part of a series of interviews with authors from or writing about Appalachia. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Andrea Billups is our news director. I'm your host and producer, Glynis Board. This is West Virginia Morning.